Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hillier, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those marking their first adventure into the realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. This week is not going to be any different, and they specialize in a variety and plethora of art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com. Or follow at JV Hilliard Books on Twitter/X, whatever they're calling it these days, Instagram, TikTok, and or YouTube, and look for me as JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. So as we reach our witching hour this evening, let me cast my message spell and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you Dungeons and Dragons nerds out there, and I know you're there, the duration of my transmutation magic is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials. And let's enter the realm together. Today, we'll be chronicling the adventures of a fellow speculative fiction scribe, Catherine Weibel. So if you're a fan of fantasy, you like Viking stuff and big battles, you may want to add her to your to-be-read list. Catherine, welcome to the realm.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. Well, tell our listeners about you, the kind of stuff you write, and where they can find you.
Okay, well, I am an epic fantasy author. I write several different series, and depending on the series, they range from young adult, new adult, to adult literature. It kind of varies just depending on the level of the grit and the dark kind of elements of the story versus kind of the noble bright, so the more questing and optimistic side of fantasy. I have one series called The Jed Chronicles, and that is for my young adult audience, and it is a portal fantasy, so think of a magical multiverse, and this is the quest-based. Lots of adventure, lots of magic. Pretty much it's a free-for-all of all sorts of mythological creatures, and it does deal with the Chosen One archetype. Going a little darker, I have my series called The Incarn Saga. It is my only full-length finalized series. There are four books in it, and it is a war-based animal shifter series, obviously based in a kingdom that's on the verge of war, and it pulls in a lot of kind of interesting lore about a young girl who is drafted into the war, and you follow her and her band of friends as they discover that a lot of the stuff they knew about their society and their history is not exactly true. And then my final series that I have is The Guardian Speaker. This one is aimed at adults. It is a Viking dark fantasy. It's also a dark retelling of Norse myth. So you do get to immerse yourself in all things Nordic. But for the shock and as the shock factor, a lot of people to hear the Loki and Thor and Odin and these kind of iconic characters right up front, but I hold them in the background because I actually start with some really obscure lore. But you can find me and my books on my website. It's Catherine Weibel, which is spelled W-I-B-E-L-L, books.com. And I also sell through Amazon, where you can find my hardbacks, paperbacks, ebooks, and the Audible versions. And I sell signed copies on Etsy. So you can find me there and on a variety of platforms, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. Pretty much, if you name it, I'm probably on it.
Yeah, you're about as active as any writer can be. And before we get started, I want to congratulate you on your wedding. I know you recently married, and I have to say this. Coolest pictures of all time. I am so jealous. For those, like, this is a radio show, so I know people can't see this, but imagine a Valkyrie bride fighting her groomsman. He's wearing his tux, she's wearing her gown with swords on a mountainside. Badass. I was so jealous. I tried talking my wife into having it. We had eight groomsmen, and I was going to have them hold swords and us come in, and she turned that down. We ended up doing a football thing, so it didn't work out. But
probably safer.
Much safer, but not as cool. But look, you know, you mentioned a bunch of stuff in there, from YA to new adult to your dark fantasy for adults. I'm obviously a big fan. I've read most, not all, but most of your stuff. But which of your books did you find the most difficult to write? And you know, on the other side of it, which is your favorite of them all?
Okay, well, those are multifaceted answers. For me, I guess going with the first one of which one was the hardest one to write, That's, I mean, really depends on, I guess, how you view it. My Viking Fantasy, The Guardian Speaker, I've researched and researched for about 5 years, and I continue to do so as I'm wrapping up that series, at least for the first draft. And I've invested a lot of time and energy to the point where I actually was invited to be a panelist at Dragon Con, a big convention in Atlanta, where I was on a history panel about the history of Vikings in England, because I've spent enough time studying that era history at this point. But so that was a lot of time investment. On the other hand, my young adult Portal Fantasy, one of the books I was dealing with playing around with time and time loops, and that got so complicated, my diagrams were all over the place. I'm still a little cross-eyed thinking about it. So that may have been complicated in a different sense.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you know, if you had a character in any of the series that was your favorite, and I know I'm asking you to pick your favorite of your children, you know, who would it be, and why do you think? I know. I got to put you on the spot, though. What do you think?
Well, I love always the warrior female archetype kind of characters, and so I do incorporate them in all my series at this moment. But I guess I could, if I had to whittle my way through them, I would go with one of, I guess, more or less an obvious choice for my Portal Fantasy, the Jed Chronicles, because it was based off a character that my sister and I developed in this magical multiverse that was kind of, that stemmed from characters and worlds and realities that we pulled from our imaginary play as children. The main character is kind of like my alter ego from childhood, so I would have to go with her and gave her my name. So she is Katie of Earth, is what they kind of referred to her as throughout the series. So I would have to go with her because she really was my alter ego for many years while I was running around in the woodlands of Georgia.
Well, that's a cool story, you know, and I know you and I have talked about some of the history and where it came from. And I'm the same way. I mean, some of my stories come from my Dungeons and Dragons play. Right. So like, I get it. And those stories are typically the best stories because they've been battle tested. You've tested them on other people, in this case, yourself and your sister. But I always ask that question because I think it's fun and I think authors like it. But we do have a lot of, I mean, this is just isn't readers that listen to the show. There's a lot of authors that listen to the show too. And for those that are here, I know that one of the things that's hard for any author is to receive constructive criticism. We all do it. We all need it. It makes our work better, and iron sharpens iron. But do you have a group of people that you trust, or someone in particular you trust to be objective and constructive on your work? At what point are you, free to, do you feel okay to share your work with them? Like, explain your process for receiving that constructive criticism. I know a lot of folks have beta readers, or they bounce it off their editors or publishers and things like that, but what's your process like? And how do you receive that constructive criticism and make your books better because of it?
Well, I think when anybody's trying to find the right critic, they have to understand, and I actually had talked about this with another author fairly recently about the concept of, everybody's family and friends wants to support them, and those are probably not necessarily the people you want to wrangle in to be your critics, because they're more likely to tell you the shiny, pretty stuff and not be, that objective critic. So that's something always to be aware of. But for me, I do have a couple of beta readers that I use in the early on process of my editing. And then, of course, I have an editor, or actually had two now, editors that I've developed a relationship over the years. And I really do trust their opinion and their critique when it comes to the story and writing. But of recent, now that I have a wonderful thing called a husband, he's actually very objective, so I can throw an idea off and he'll be one of the first ones to be like, nope, that doesn't really make sense. You need to work on that. And of course, I always have been seeing for a while. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. Walk off, and then come back about like an hour later and be like, you may have something there. So
yeah, well,
it is hard to take criticism, but.
No, you nailed it. I mean, you show it to your mom and it's the best thing she's ever read, right? And it's like, you don't need that. You need someone to tell you where you're falling down. I've always used writers groups, and I feel that the right kind of beta readers, people that read your stuff all the time within genre, understand what's mm-hmm. expected, what's not expected, where you might be, out of line, or, especially with, I think, the emergence of dark fantasy, the kind of stuff you and I write, you know, the rules are different than it is for traditional high fantasy and more of the epic Tolkien stuff that you might find out there, where the good guys don't always win. And so how do you deliver that without alienating your readership and stuff like this? I think that you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the right kind of beta readers and the right kind of constructive critics, not critics, constructive critics.
And I do want to jump in just quickly and say, people who are listening, to be aware, there are a pocket of people, and they're called I think the term right now, it may be changing in the future, it's called sensitivity readers. And depending on what you write, they are very, very valuable, because it's usually when you're writing about some kind of subpopulace that is something that you don't particularly fall into. Maybe it's someone else's ethnicity or orientation or what have you, but there are a group of people who are in that populace who will read your book and be like, yes, you're representing correctly, or no, you need to work on this. This is kind of insulting. And so those are always valuable to use whenever you need.
You know, that's a great point. I just did that because one of my newer works in progress has a woman who's the main character that has some problems with like a dissociative identity disorder. Because of the way that she was tortured as a child. And you're right. I mean, you want to hit that in every way possible. So I talked to a child psychologist about it to make sure that, I mean, we spent a half an hour going through some of the things she thought was correct and things I can get away with because this was a character that's made up and frankly half monster anyway. So they're what might not be directly identified as a human trait, they might react differently. I can get away with allowing her to do certain things with, but that's, that's a really, really great point. But, one of the things that you mentioned a little earlier that jumped out at me is, the genres that you write in. What are some of the elements that are becoming cliche in your genres? I mean, like, I know you write, you talked about, you've got the shifter stuff, you've got, Viking, dark Viking lore. Are you running into points where, like, you've seen the same story, like you've seen that before, and you're trying to do stuff differently? I mean, what are some of the cliches that you've been running into recently that you're trying to avoid?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to say cliches or versus kind of tropes, because when it comes to things like tropes, there are definitely people who get bored of them really quickly, and then there are people who absolutely will eat them up. Doesn't matter how many times they read them. So it's kind of hard to kind of walk that line. There are definitely some things I'm aware of, like after writing my initial series, the Inkarn Saga, marketing is harder because a lot of people assume nowadays that when you mention shifter, they think it's going to be a heavy romance, when it's actually a dark fantasy that does have romantic elements, but they're very subtle and not really the main point of the story. So for marketing-wise, that's something I have to still, even to this day, kind of navigate. But when it comes to kind of the broader scope, I mean, when you're working with fantasy, everybody has, I guess, something set in mind when you use verbiage or characters like dragons, or even when you're talking about like something based off myth and lore. When I say, I write Norse mythology, everybody's like, ooh, is Loki going to be it or Thor? And again, they want kind of the characters, or they expect something out of it. When I'm like, I'm actually starting with something really obscure. It's kind of the whole concept kind of orients around that the people during the era of the Vikings believed that along with your physical body and your mind and soul, you also had animal-shaped guardian spirits that were a part of yourself and another entity that was your personal luck. And so you have pretty much two other entities that are all kind of embodied in you that kind of go with you. And so I kind of focus on the fact of what if someone could actually see and communicate with everybody's animal-shaped guardian spirits, and that's something that people don't expect, which so far I think my readers have enjoyed because it's just different enough but still familiar enough when it comes to Norse mythology.
That's a fun question that I'm going to ask that I wasn't sure where you were going, and then it hit me. So do you have an animal spirit, and if so, what would that animal be?
That would be hard to say because the concept of Fugir in Norse myth, their form kind of manifests when you're an infant, like shortly after you're born, and it represents kind of your core personality traits. And in the lore, like if I had royal blood, It may be take the form of a bear if I was going to be a very prowess fighter. It may be a wolf. My main character is a squirrel, which, you know, she's very meek and mild, but she always questions why, and there's some reasons down the line. But for me personally, I don't know. Everybody wants that flashy animal. Everybody wants, you know, the big lions or tigers or something like that. So for me, I have to say that would be kind of similar, where I would either be, I don't know, a snow leopard, a wolf, you know, something like that is what I would want. More likely, I'm going to be some kind of like docile lapdog or something.
Some lab retriever, right?
There you go. Hey, our new dog is an Irish wolfhound, and he's a dwarf, so maybe I'm a wolfhound.
Well, so I have a red fox lab retriever named McLeod after the Highlander series, and lying at my feet right here, I've got a Siberian husky named Thor. So for me, I love dogs, and they're good. But I think if I was picking an animal for myself, it might be some sort of falcon. I think that's a cool.
There you go.
Sort of. Yeah, like hunting thing, but also different than what other people would take. So I'm a falcon, whether you like it or not. We're into that. But
I love it.
So getting back to your writing stuff, I mean, I at the beginning of every chapter of mine, and I know some people like this, some people don't, I often put a quote in there just to kind of preface what the rest of that chapter is going to be like and kind of prepare the reader for it. Do you have a favorite quote that you've written in any or all of your books that you think really when you wrote it, you were like, oh, this is epic. This is really good. You know, do you have something like that? And could you share it if you do?
Oh, that's a tough question. I know there are definitely quotes that I have written that I've thoroughly enjoyed, and it's like a certain verbiage and everything, but since I haven't memorized them, I wouldn't want to paraphrase them, because part of it is the way you word it. But definitely some of the introductions to the Guardian speaker, again, that dark Viking fantasy, I always introduce each novella with two things. One's an epigraph that's actually pulled from some saga or one of the Eddas from
cool.
the Norse myth. And then I also then jump into, when I get to the story, there is always a nice little intro paragraph, which is very kind of poetic and mystical, and I love the way they always sound. But again, without having one of the novellas open in front of me, I would paraphrase it and not make it sound as lovely as it took the time and effort
to write it. I thought sometimes you just remember stuff and it sticks with you, but I figured I'd ask because I think if used the right way, I think they could be powerful to start, but. You know, it could have been anything. It's no big deal. Do you, your process of writing, how do you determine the names of some of your characters? We talked a little bit about animal spirits, and we talked about, you know, sort of your writing process a little earlier. But because, you know, you're writing in fantasy, you could pretty much pick any name. But I mean, do you have a way that you determine names? Is it something that just strikes you and it's cool, or you've read it somewhere and you adapt it, or how do you come up with names for your characters?
That's been evolving, I guess, for each series, because my debut series, Incarn Saga, I kind of went the route where it's fantasy. I can create words if I want to. And I did try to create a lot of the names just to be unique for that series. And then others I pulled from kind of older sounding, almost kind of like the medieval era names for that book, just because it sounded right. But as I progress into my other two series, obviously my Viking one, my Nordic mythology one, I'm pulling actually from characters from Norse myth, so that's pretty much the name themselves. And then my other one, I do a lot of research for my Portal fantasy, and so each name that I give has a meaning, and maybe someone will figure it out, maybe they don't, but everyone has a meaning. So it may mean their name actually, when you translate it, has a special representation of what the character is about, or maybe I pulled their name from a different pocket of mythos, but each of them are, I do take the time to try to give them an appropriate name.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite name, one of your characters?
Ooh, okay. Well, again, I named one after me, so you have to be careful with that one, but oh, man. Okay. So I don't know. There's one character that I was so funny. I had a reader say this was her favorite character. His name's Gulfaxi. which is actually this Sylph-aware steed from my Portal Fantasy, and he's a little firecracker and kind of just a fun character to write, even though he's kind of a minor character in Allregard, but I just had an author be like, he is my favorite, I mean, a reader being like, he is my favorite character, and the funny thing is, he has a lot of, like I said, his personality is kind of fiery, spunky, and he has the ability to control lightning, so that kind of sparky, spunky personality fits him well, but his name's Gulfassi.
You know, you mentioned your readers before. I'm curious, can you describe your ideal reader for your books? I mean, I know because it's YA, New Age, you kind of span age categories too, but do you have someone that you see as like an ideal reader? Like I can read all of your stuff and be sad. I mean, it doesn't matter if it is YA, it's still good stuff, but do you have an ideal reader? Can you describe who that would be for you?
Well, again, it just depends because my series do dramatically differ, and I do understand that, you know, someone who wants a little more Tolkien-esque, where it's adventure and positive side, may not necessarily be the same one who wants kind of the dark fantasy dabbling grimdark on maybe more of the Game of Thrones feel. So it's kind of hard to have like that one ideal reader, but in general, if I had to capture someone, it'd be anybody obviously who loves epic fantasy. If you love, again, high action, if you love, aren't afraid of powerful women and immersed with fun battle scenes and sweeping adventure and, of course, any kind of mythology of any sort, you probably have fall in love with one and or all of my book series. But beyond that, because they differ so widely, that's where everybody kind of fragments.
Yeah, it was a loaded question going in. I know that because you have sort of a diverse audience, but it's also something that you kind of like, people like style, even though I've read books from other authors that I know they're writing in a different style. I read one recently that was a co-written by R.A. Salvatore, and it was obviously the lead writer was she was a different different author, but the two of them co-wrote it, and it was sort of a take on, you know, Arthurian legends. You can, even though it was meant for a YA audience, you can still feel the Dark Elf trilogy in there. You know what I mean? It just had that sort of bend to it, and you're like, oh yeah, I could feel Dristis in here somewhere, right? I just have to find out who that was. I think that, I'm sure you and same with me, I'm doing a young adult Kindle Vella right now that, you know, is for me, I know when I write it, it's, there's still some of my heavy writing in there that I have to kind of edit back to make sure it fits the right thing. But I know that people like that kind of stuff. But, tell everybody here, I mean, publishing industry has changed dramatically, and there are those that seek traditional publishing and those that love to be independent. Where do you fall into that category, and why did you choose to go that path?
Well, I right now am an independent author. I will probably, well, obviously I'll either remain indie and or hybrid. I'm one of the authors who I don't mind if the right deal came along and I signed, you know, for a few books here or there, that kind of hybridized idea where you can get benefits of both. But personally, right now, I love indie publishing. I am a control freak. So one of the things that's one of the huge benefits of being indie is that you do have control of the content of your stories, your cover design. You have control of everything. And that is that kind of pro and con, but it allows you to make sure you tell the story you want to tell and do it justice. And you're not limited to some of the rules and restraints that traditional publishing has, because, for instance, if you're trying to publish young adults, they are very stringent on the number of words, and you can't go over it, and they don't like when you go under it too much. And for me, when I was publishing my young adults, and I did query, my response that I got from a lot of people was I would have to cut a third of the book, and I was like, I'm not going to cut a third of the book. That is not going to do the book justice.
Exactly right.
But indie publishing, allows you to come up with your new subgenres. I mean, Travis Baldry is a name that's being more and more recognized, and he's kind of cool. Not really, he's not invented, but he definitely kind of was very entrenched in coining the term cozy fantasy. And so when you're indie, you have the opportunity to kind of carve out your own niche and have control of the downside, obviously being you have to do everything. You have to micromanage everything from marketing, advertising, and all the nitty-gritty stuff as well as the fun stuff of writing. So there are pros and cons of it, but I enjoy it. It works for me, and I'm going to continue publishing indie and, you know, keep an open mind in case, again, that right deal comes down to make me a hybrid author down the line.
Well, look, we're coming to the end of the show, and I do this with all my guests. You also ran this gauntlet a little bit when we did my YouTube stuff. We have a lightning round, and so I'm calling this the Viking edition.
Okay.
So it's themed. I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff at you, and then quick answers. One word, one sentence. We'll go from there before we wrap up the show. So are you ready?
I hope so.
All right. First one, we'll start with a softball. What is your favorite part of Viking culture?
Favorite part of Viking culture? Well, I don't know. I think for me, and historically speaking, it is fascinating because they were one of the most liberal people historically when it came to women and what they could and could not do. For instance, a woman could divorce, and that was something that a lot of other nations around the time didn't. So I think that's fascinating. Of course, on the counter, I love their myth.
Well, speaking of myths, do you have a favorite Norse deity?
Deity. Okay. Well, here's where the cliche-ness comes in. Honestly, it splits. Doing this research for all these years for my series, Loki's really fascinating in the acts. If you actually study all his lore, it's the perfect story arc of someone who self-destructs, yet figures out his vengeance in the end. So it's a beautiful, horrible story, his whole storyline. On the other hand, I discovered a very obscure deity, which I cannot remember how to pronounce the name, so I will not try to butcher it, but she's literally the guardian of the underworld. She is the one who kind of serves like Chiron, the riverboatman. The one who keeps the living and the dead separate, and she's dressed in armor and has a sword, and I thought that was really neat.
Is there anything from Viking life or culture you wish was still around today?
Ooh, okay. That was hard because, I don't know. I think what was really neat was the fact that they were very big into trade and kind of helped bring this connectivity of the globe at the time, which, you know, they had connections all the way to the Silk Road, and they had pathways carved down to Constantinople and into India and stuff. And I always just like the concept of the world being able to work together. Obviously, if you really want to pick out the history, it's a dark history. So I can't really say that I would want anything in particular come back modern-day standard.
Well, look, we're coming to the end of my message spell here, and I can feel the magic fading from my eyes. But before it leaves me, I want to thank you again, Catherine Wybell, for being on the Realm this evening. And in the short time we have remaining, Catherine, tell everybody where they can find you and your books.
Okay, well, again, I have my website. It's CatherineWybellBooks.com, and that's K-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E. Wybell, which is W-I. B as in boy, E-L-L, books.com. And on there, you can find links to all my socials. I'm on most of them. And I sell my books through Amazon, Audible, and I actually do direct sales through Etsy at this moment of time.
Well, great. Thanks again, Catherine, for being on The Realm. And to our followers, thanks for you for lending your ear to us tonight. And until next time, I'm J.V. Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.